Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I was counting back the years to try figure out what age I was last time Celtic beat Livingston away from home. And it's a depressing conclusion because I wasn't all that young, considering that I would consider myself to still be a young man. Welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. We are the podcast to look at the performance, the XG and the numbers of Celtic FC. And over the last week or so, it has not been pleasant viewing if you are a Celtic supporter. A 1-0 defeat to Livingston away from home in the Tony Macaroni Stadium. I think it's an insult in itself that Celtic have lost in a stadium called the Tony Macaroni Stadium. But that is a side note to all of this. Jico James, hello.
Hey, Enda. Hey, Alan.
Howdy.
Alan Morrison, Celtic by Numbers. We said we had our reservations about this game. We went into details about how Livingston will make it tough, and tough they did make it. A low block to beat all low blocks. A miserable game. Have you rewatched this in full?
Because well, if you have to.
You're not earning your wage, or your wage is not high enough for you.
Yeah, no, I have to. I don't capture the data unless I do. So, unfortunately, yes, I had to watch it back. I actually, wrote a small preview piece on the Celtic by Numbers site, and it was. Looking at their performance data so far this season, was very optimistic. I couldn't believe how poor they have been this season, which just goes to show what can go wrong. Postecoglou did not, or as far as I'm aware, and I've not watched all the interviews to be honest, because there's only so much I could take. But as far as I'm aware, he has not used either the Betis game. Or the lack of ability to rotate players and the continual injuries. He didn't use any of those things, as far as I'm aware, as an excuse for that performance. And fair play to him. But in my view, that was a very tired performance, even if not physically. And I think it was for some players. And I'll touch on that. And certainly mentally. And the way that mental tiredness manifests itself in football is at either end of the pitch, right? So... You either doze off, don't spot danger quick enough in the defensive side, and then you can't make clear decisions quickly enough, and overcompensate by rushing things in the final third. Same sort of outcome as you get from sort of stress. So touch on the creativity piece and the evidence for that, which I think. Was partly at least explained by fatigue. But if you think about the fact that Tom Rogic, for example, we all know struggles with fitness generally, not even injury, just general conditioning and match fitness. He played his first and only 90 minutes of the season in the heat of Seville. Okay, on the run up to this game, and if you look at his contribution to the game. 19 passes. In a midfield three, he's completed 19 passes. Not a single chance did he create. Turnbull, 56 passes. McCarthy, 49, right? So he was just peripheral, utterly peripheral to the game. Turnbull was completing his third full 90 minutes in a row. And as you recall, all through last season, we were used to seeing Turnbull, whether he was playing well or not, generally going off, you know, from anywhere from the 65th minute onwards. Jota played as straight in the team and has played 390 minutes in a week, right? He didn't play 90 minutes in a single game of football last season. The last time he played back-to-back 90 minutes was in the 18-19 season in the Portuguese second division. And even then, three games in a row meant Saturday, 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 not Saturday, Thursday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. Juranovic, again, has come into this team and he's on the back of being thrown in, has played 490 minutes. Ayeti has played the last 390 minutes in a week. The last time he's completed 90 minutes for Celtic was in the middle of February. And it's the 18-19 season, the last time Ayeti completed three matches in a row, a full 90 minutes. And that was for Basel. And again, that wasn't necessarily three games in a week. So, you know, those things I cannot believe didn't matter. And the fact that, you know, we don't, again, continually not to have good options on the bench. But, you know, fair play to Postecoglou. He didn't use that as an excuse. But to me, you know, the lack of creativity. I mean, James, before we came on here, mentioned the crosses. We attempted 38 crosses in this game. That's 9 more than any other game this season. And you might think crosses are a proxy for getting the ball in the box and, you know, trying to make things happen. To me, it's a proxy for lazy thinking, just thinking, I've got to get the ball in the box and be seen to be doing something because I can't work out how to break down this defence. So I'll just lob it in the box and hope that something happens. And then, you know, disappointed when the land of the giants in there and the black shirts kind of headed away continuously. Mm-hmm. You know, only 5 were successful. We averaged 17 crosses a game, 38. Okay. You know, we play short from corners for a reason because we don't have an aerial threat, right? So banging in 38 crosses is not really going to do it. You know, the expected assists from the game, so this is chances created through actual passes leading to a shot, was 1.5. The season average is 2.5. It was 0 big chances as classified in this game, which is the first time this season that's happened. We failed with 1 through ball. Normally we attempt loads more than that. We only got bypassed packing stats, 14 defenders. I know they were sat in, their defenders weren't really going over the halfway line, but the average is about 19. Rogic and McCarthy, 0 expected assists between them. That's 2/3 of your midfield. Abada and Jota, your wide players, 0.1 expected assists. So there's just no creativity. Yeah. And as I say, I think it's a combination of mainly tiredness and then also I think we'll talk about the midfield three a little bit as to why they weren't, effective. We'll touch on that as a separate topic maybe, but I'll just pause there because that's probably depressing enough.
Yeah, there's a lot in that. I tweeted after the game, some people weren't really on board with it, but I do think it's important to add context to these defeats. It's not to give an excuse, but it does. I mean, it adds to reasonings why this potentially could have happened.
So if I just, sorry, Indica, I'll just come in on that one because I what I sensed after the game, and I don't tend to, especially after defeat, I don't really engage on social media at all. It's just pointless. But certainly after, what is it, 3-4 defeats in 5 games, whatever it is, there seemed to be a real shift for people just not wanting to tolerate anything that they thought was going to be considered an excuse. And that we now have to move on to blaming somebody. We now have to move on to giving Postecoglou a kicking or the players a kicking because, you know, that's just how I feel and that's how I want to react. So I didn't get into that whole tiredness thing. But to me, it's an obvious thing, right? It's pretty obvious. I mean, it was 28, 29 degrees in Seville. No subs were used. It was just, you know, and it was a hell of a game in terms of the intensity of it.
Well, in terms of squad, this was a real anomaly of a game because there's so much going on that has, you know, the chaos within the starting 11 alone will let you know that this game may not have ever been going to go Celtic's favour. And don't get me wrong, Livingston, you know, they're a small side with a small budget and small wage package. So Celtic these players should be able to find a way. But the back four of Bolly Bongoli, Bolly hasn't played in over a year for Celtic. Welsh, Carter Vickers haven't played together this year. Juranovic starting at right back for the first time. That four combination never played together. The centre midfield of James McCarthy, who has reportedly been out for COVID over the last 2 weeks before this, Tom Rogic and David Turnbull, like you said, who have played multiple games now in a row, and no real replacements on the bench for either of those two players to change it up a bit, even to like change the formation, change the style, change your approach. There's nobody on the bench that can actually replace them. Likewise, in the forward line with Jota, Ayeti and Abada, that's the first time that they've played in those positions together. And Abada has just come back from injury. On the bench, you have Liam Scales has not played a game for Celtic yet. Nir Beaton has not played in several weeks and is a centre-back. So you've got one centre-back there. Ismail Asaro, who is a centre defensive midfielder. Mikey Johnson, who has barely played over the last year and a half. Scott Bain. And I think there's somebody else that I'm missing, but I can't see them on my screen. But essentially, Celtic had three defenders.
I think Montgomery was the other one.
Montgomery, sorry. Yeah, they had three defenders, two fullbacks, one centre-back, and a centre defensive midfielder, and a goalkeeper. That's what Celtic had to take off the bench. So if your game plan number one does not work, you do not have a second game plan because you do not have anybody to change your game plan because the players just simply aren't there. I don't think that is making excuses. I think that's just bloody obvious.
I agree. I think the other part that is, worthy of consideration is, the relative stylistic matchup. So Livingston's pitch, obviously, everyone talks about it's dry and it's plastic and it has weird bounces and that type of thing. But that's compounded by the fact, and I'm starting to do a little bit of a mini project, doing some regression analysis to see if there's any signal in the noise, is the pitch size, from what I could find in public information, is smallest in the Premiership.
It's wide enough, it's just very short.
Right. So yeah. there's just less ground for them to cover. And when your game plan is to play narrow and park the bus, when you have a matchup like Celtic, where you don't really have a target man, so to speak, or we're not playing two up top. I did a piece a while back for Alan's site, basically looking at this phenomena, which is why under Lennon or even under Rodgers we hadn't tried two up top, playing narrow with these kind of opponents, to look at alternative ways, because it's just difficult to drag teams like this out of position on that kind of pitch with the dimensions that they're dealing with. I mean, it's just a totally different animal playing there versus, let's say, St. Mirren, whose pitch is almost as big as Celtic Park. Again, going off of what I've found publicly. So there's some nuance there. All of the factors, I mean, I think Alan's information on the games played and the minutes is tremendous context, and the depth of it is really valuable. So we've talked about risks piling up and how they can manifest, and throw that into the mixer with the fact that they had a central midfielder playing striker who had an unbelievable finish, right? So that's the formula.
That was a great goal.
Yeah, it was. So that's
mentioned how good a finish that was.
Yeah, so that's a formula for a 1-0 loss at Livingston when you pile all this stuff up, even though they've been playing terribly and have a wage budget that's like 1/25th of ours. So that's how these things can emerge. In my benchmarking thread I did before the game, I mean, this is also something that didn't come out of nowhere. It's actually very comparable in some of the underlying stats to the 0-0 in November of, I think it was 18 under Rodgers, where it was just a dreadful game and just not much in it. And the big difference with this one was that finish from Shinny. So, that's why all this context, I think, is important. It doesn't excuse it. It doesn't mean that, losing the three home game away games in a row isn't concerning and all these other things. It's, but that's what we do here, is we try to explain why things happen, provide that context, and then discussion, debate whether these things are going to potentially be persistent. Is this a one-off? Is, you know, how do we try to extrapolate maybe some of the lessons that we can draw from a game like this, and whether there's anything to really project forward? We're going to play there one more time, at least, I think. So, you know, we'll see what that looks like when we get down to the third round of fixtures.
Yeah, so there's quite a bit to get into when you're looking at this game. We will talk about the forward line. Ange was talking about Giacomakos, the reason that he hasn't been playing. He's not fit enough is the answer, that he's not ready to play first team football for Celtic. And that pretty much goes for a lot of players at the minute. Celtic did bring in a new strength and conditioning coach, the former Spurs coach as well. So that hopefully will add a little bit of a layer of improvement in that side of things. Let's start with the midfield though, because it was, like I said, James McCarthy, David Turnbull, and Tom Rogic. Not a lot of legs in that midfield to start off with. Secondly, ball progression from the number six position. James, you highlighted James McCarthy's weak point from that in general. I would argue that Ange started with this because he figured that if the game wasn't going the way that Ismail Asoro adds a little bit more energy into the midfield, that he can actually potentially change it. Whereas James McCarthy, I mean, what's the point bringing him off the bench if you need to win the game, or if you need to actually go chase the game? It's a different story if you're defending a lead. So where do we start with this midfield, Alan?
So what unifies the three is, I think you alluded to, is a general lack of athleticism. And secondly, is a lack of ball regain ability, which in a high pressing system is absolutely paramount, and actually against a low block is even more paramount. So I think those three are, and I hate to use what is becoming a cliche, but I think that is a pretty much a toxic combination in midfield, because the one thing that was really obvious is on that pitch, it is more difficult to physically turn. And what you were seeing over and over again was the ball being played into midfield and then it coming straight back again, because players were either, some of it could have been about poor body shape, not receiving the ball on the half turn. Some of it could have been about just the sheer aggression and energy of the Livingston, you know, marking and press once Celtic got over the halfway line, which is, you know, you can't fault the packed their team full of young legs, and they absolutely ran after Celtic every time they crossed the halfway line. You know, shame they couldn't keep it up last night, but hey, two games in a week. So the you know, but that inability to receive the ball and turn and go forward in midfield meant the ball just kept being recycled back again, and none of those three had the ability. What I'm talking about is if you contrast with Soro, who's quite short and has a low center of gravity, Soro was able to change direction very quickly. And again, nobody's, you know, saying Soro's like, you know, the reincarnation of N'Golo Kanté, but he has that ability to shift position, to move quickly. He moves, he can move the ball quicker physically, and he can move himself and turn quicker. I mean, that was just lacking across all three players. So it just meant that midfield was really, really ponderous in that regard. And then, as I say, against a low block, you can press really aggressively, because what are they going to do? From a very deep position, they're going to launch it long to a midfielder right now. You might lose the odd header, but are they going to be able to get to that second ball quick enough? So you can really go for it in terms of that high press. When you're midfield three, or McCarthy, who just really didn't get involved. I mean, his stats were quite incredible in a way. He actually didn't lose a single challenge, but he only won five. Even Brown was getting involved in double that number of challenges last season. Even as old as he was and as slow as he was getting himself involved in double the challenges. Rogic and Turnbull basically won one challenge between them in the whole game, and their averages over the season are amongst the lowest across the team. So you've got three players there, whether it's McCarthy's overall low volume and Rogic's and Turnbull's inability to press and win the ball back. So that whole centre, you're not effectively pressing and putting that Livingston team under pressure. Because if you could win the ball back again, you have a Christie winning the ball back on the edge of the Livingston penalty area, then things start to happen and you start to break down that low block a lot easier. So that side of it, I think, was just a disaster for Celtic. You know, as I say, physically, and then, you know, in their ability to influence. I mean, Turnbull, I had him as my man of the match because actually he had the best sort of offensive stats once he did get the ball, once he did get moving forward. But in terms of the system, the context of how Andrew Postecoglou wants to play, and then the context of trying to break down a low block, and the context of having three players like that all playing in that same position, terrible.
Well, and I think that's a great summary, Alan. I think that's why we were shuttled wide so much. That's why, where there was any, you know, if you even want to call it creativity or attempts at creativity, that's where it was coming from. It's because there was just this huge black hole in midfield as a result of all of that, combined with the fact that they were crowding narrowly in that deep block. I mean, it's just, there was no mechanism to be dragging defenders out of position. The rapidity with which the ball was being moved was too slow in order to do that. Because of the fatigue issues, players weren't making runs. The players weren't necessarily good run creators anyway. You know, it's not Kyogo in there or, you know, somebody like that that's going to be making dynamic runs. So you throw all that into the, as I said earlier, you throw it all into the mixer, and that's, you know, that's the explanation. The one thing I did, you know, I've been very vocal in expressing my displeasure with some of the transfers that came in over the summer, McCarthy being one of them. But, you know, there's no question there's extenuating circumstances with him, given the fact that he was just coming off of COVID reportedly, going into play in this kind of game on that pitch. So, you know, it hasn't really changed anything that I think longer term, but I think to think that iteration of McCarthy is likely to be the baseline, I think that's unfair. I think, you know, God help us if it is. And I think it's unrealistic to think that it is. I mean, I think he'll get better, but so will the opposition. And, you know, that's my concern. As I always say, how does it scale? How does, you know, because when you have a position, a player of his skill set in that position, it creates basically two ways for a team, at least two, to kind of try and benefit from those deficiencies. One is just to stand off, let him have the ball, you know, and they did that at points where he would just have the ball in space. And what are you going to do with it? Basically, you know, let him try to do something with it and cut off passing lanes and aggressively limit his options. And then the other option is to just press him aggressively. And we didn't see that a ton. But again, if you just kind of envision somebody like a Ryan Kent or, you know, even a couple of the midfielders for Hibs that are pretty athletic guys, pretty decent size, you know, like we've seen people targeting McGregor now to try and nullify him and build up. You know, so there's going to be multiple ways for opponents to try and, you know, capitalize on some of these structural deficiencies that we're going to have now. If even if he does, and hopefully he will, and I think it's more likely than not that he gets significantly better.
Yeah. Well, there were reports in The Athletic from Kieran Devlin as well this week that came out that sparked a sort of an angry response online about James McCarthy and his ability to get up to speed with Postecoglou's game plan and the training sessions as well. Apparently he's struggling in that. You know, you have to take each source with a pinch of salt, but if it's been reported, then there's either somebody in the training ground that's reporting this to Kieran Devlin or it's actually happening. So there it is worrying signs that stuff's coming out at this stage of the season. One thing that I do want to ask you guys is something that has been sort of thrown out there without any real, I guess, evidence or sort of argument behind it. It's just people saying that Celtic should have had a plan B. They should, you know, they should have did something else. Okay, what else should they have done? Well, I don't know, but that's essentially the guts of the argument. Is there anything else Celtic could have done here? Because from where I'm standing, looking, taking the squad on its merits, on the style of the play, on the quality of players they have, the positions that these players play, a possessional game for me doesn't work against Livingston because, I mean, they were playing deep, so they're just going to sit back and let you have the ball. And, I mean, do Celtic have those penetrating passes to a forward who's breaking those lines in a Yeti? I don't think so. Can you play a long, dramatic ball that you're getting the ball in the centre backs and they're playing it over the top of the defence? I don't think we have the players that are going to hold up the position. So what could Celtic have done differently here in the midfield, if anything?
Well, as I say, you've already got a situation where you've got two number eights who are not number eights trying to break down, having the energy to break down a low block without the energy and no one on the bench to improve that situation. What he did was, I think, all he could do. He put Bitton on to vary the passing options from the back. So sometimes he could go, if there was an opportunity, which I don't think there was, because they're defending a lead, so they didn't empty their own defensive zone really. So the long ball was very rarely on, but at least that was an option. And he brought Sorrow on to again just give that additional energy, and immediately he played a very quick through ball into Adjeti's feet for the best chance in the game. Great save. We didn't manage to do that again. The only freshening up in the wide areas was going to be through Johnson, who again we know he's been out for a long time. His touch and his feel and his up to game speed, just wasn't there. What plan B? What would you suggest? We couldn't have two forwards on there. We couldn't. We were already banging in more crosses than we'd ever done, which you could argue was a plan B. And that didn't work. More long shots. We all love that, don't we? The options are just not there. And this is going to become apparent in a lot of games between now and probably the end of January, until either the injuries clear or, we get some reinforcements, because there just isn't the depth. And certainly in the attacking areas. I mean, this is your third choice striker. Yeah, that is what it is.
Yeah, I generally agree. I think I think that to make a significant change that could be meaningful would require some radical changes and experimentation, right? So, for example, one of the theories I've had relative to this kind of an opponent is rather than try to outfox them, basically match them in what they're doing and just use your better athletes. So for example, and again, I'm saying this is extreme. It's theoretical. The likelihood of Postecoglou or really most managers doing something like this. I mean, this is like Barnsley territory, going really counter to the normalcy and seeing if there's something that maybe gives you a competitive advantage is, play guys like Irigidi, Shaw, put Shaw in the midfield. Shaw's a big, strong, relatively athletic young guy who's, even though what we've heard and seen, maybe he's not ready for our first team normally, he's still probably better than the players on Livingston. And his physical profile and his athletic profile, so basically what I'm getting at is kind of match their narrowness, match their physicality with what we have with better athletes, and then just do better at the chaos, right? Just basically say, okay, we're not going to try and outfox you and play around your chaos. We're going to mix it up with you with our better athletes and just expect that we'll do better with the chaos. Now there's risk to that. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about is a huge one. But intuitively to me, that at least could be a way to try and combat this very weird situation. That again, this is not out of nowhere. I read a lot about people saying, well, this is only since they came back to the premiership. It's only the fifth game now, which is all true. But those five games are now against three different managers that played three different ways. And Livingston, prior to coming back up, was not embracing any kind of analytics like they are. As we talked about in the preview to the game, where they've kind of optimized what they do to a degree, particularly at home. So, you know, I think there might be some ways to do it, but I agree with Al. I mean, I think Ange pulled the levers that were reasonable to pull. I mean, I saw a lot of people just, you know, as normal, as Alan talked about, blaming, you know, people blaming Bitton for that loss. And, you know, it's confirmation bias kind of craziness that goes on. I thought that was a reasonable sub because he is one of our best deep lying passers. And we were desperate to try and get chances created. And at that point, they weren't really doing anything to counter of any substance. So the problems that we've talked about with him defending was a lesser evil relative to maybe he can do something creatively.
I mean, you could have done it earlier, maybe. I mean, they did a really, really, really sound job in completely killing the game. I find it, and I need to do something properly on this, but pack passing volume and chance creation, I think, are almost exactly correlated. And if you drew like a little one of these little diagrams of the game showing expected goals as it goes through the games, and you drew packing, you'd actually tell the story of the game quite well. And there was two moments in the second half, around about shortly after halftime and sort of 62nd minute or something like that, where Celtic didn't complete a pack pass for 3, 4, 5 minutes in two blocks. That's very unusual. Normally it's one or two passes a minute that are like that. And it just that absolutely kills momentum, is because they were going down at every touch. They were getting the free kick awarded in their favour, and then they were getting this trainer on, and they absolutely killed it. So he could have perhaps changed it up a little bit earlier. Maybe that would be a slight criticism rather than the 72nd minute. But honestly, I don't see it. I just don't see it.
I think that's a good point. Definitely, he could have made particularly the first two subs with Sorrow and Bitton earlier. Agree with that.
Yeah, there's a couple of players as well. You know, I think this is purely out of the necessity that potentially you could argue, you know, you're going into this side, this game, that Livingston are going to try and nick a goal and sit back. And maybe you should have more options on the bench. Like, you have three defenders, a defensive midfielder and a goalkeeper on the bench. Like, maybe bring Owen Moffat up from the B's for this game, to have him on the bench, even if you're not going to use him, just as an option to change it up. Potentially Bonson Lawwell, the midfielder, who's supposed to be doing really well as well, simply just to have those options. Maybe that is potentially one thing that you could have in your locker. Let's move to the forward line then. I think in general it was a poor game for Abada and for Jota. I don't think they did much in general. In terms of Albion Ejiati, the game plan, well, I'll say the game plan that Celtic implemented with, like you said, 38 crosses going into it, it just doesn't suit Albion Ejiati, and he was on a fool's errand really throughout the entire game. But could he have done more, Alan?
Last season, you probably might remember, I think I said, look, I still think there's some value and utility in Ejiati, but what I would be telling him is don't leave the width of the 18-yard box or the penalty area and get in the box as much as you can, and don't be trying to go out wide and linking play and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I've got what I asked for, because that's exactly how Postecoglou has told him to play. It's actually quite astonishing the degree to which Ejiati isn't involved in the game. I mean, he's played three consecutive 90 minutes now, and in those three games, he's had 49 possession events. So 49 kind of interactions with the ball or challenges, that kind of thing. That averages 16 a game. If you compare that with recent forwards, you know, Edouard, 33 possession events a game, Kyogo, 36, even Lee Griffiths, 37, can you believe?
Lee Griffiths is currently kicking
kicking Pyro around. Yeah,
let's leave him out. Does that count in his 37?
There you go. So the guy is literally is like there to do one thing, and that's score goals. And to be fair to him, you know, from 16 possession events, he's averaging just 0.56 expected goals. He's getting three shots in the box per game. And he's overachieving on his XG. He's actually averaging 0.84 goals a game. But I think that is probably the best use of Ajeti because he's not particularly fast. I think you want him in a position like Sorrow found him, where he just gets a second to get a shot away, and he got it perfectly on target in the corner low. It was just a great save. That's exactly what you're looking for. But you know, we've got to be honest and realistic about this. This is his Celtic's third choice striker. If you look at, I just did a quick comparison of his stats with Edouard. We know Edouard wasn't exactly on the top of his form this season, but if you look at expected goals, shots, and total big chances, expected assists, key passes, touches in the box, they're all lower for Ajeti than they were for Edouard. So you know, this is our third choice striker, and we've got nobody to come off the bench and offer a different option. But I think Postecoglou, again, one of his strengths I think we'll see is his ability to simplify things, both in terms of how players are used, but also the game in general, which is always a huge skill in my book. And I think with Ajeti, like he has with Starfelt, is he's got him to simplify his game, which I think, again, is going to be an overall a good thing. But again, we come back to when it doesn't come, it's not working, or there's, you know, we've tried the same thing, 38 crosses banged in, nothing's happening. There was nothing there to change it up.
James?
Yeah, I think a good thing to remember is that the high likelihood is that Ajeti was recruited to play as a striker with Edouard in a 3-5-2. So his skill set of staying around the box and basically being good at finishing low crosses and linking up with a creative striker that basically puts it on a platter for him, as Edouard was capable of doing when he was at his best, playing with another striker. I think that's basically where his optimal role may have been at Celtic, but that's not the role he's going to have in Ange's system. And, you know, so you're left, as we've talked about, trying to optimize with these misshapen parts and, you know, whipping 38 crosses into a guy who wins less than one third of his aerial duels is, you know, kind of the type of result that can manifest when you've got these misshapen parts.
Yeah. So I guess the final question before we move on to the Raith Rovers game this evening, where do we go from here in terms of the league? How much pressure is Ange under now to pick up results where even, you know, look, the squad's not there. It's not going to be there for a while. Where do we go from here now in terms of picking ourselves up and going again against Hibs, who are a good side this year? They're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, as James said last week, probably more points will be dropped than perhaps in the last couple of seasons. I mean, you know, the Rangers had to rely on an absolutely incredibly offside goal to even get a point at home to Motherwell. You know,
sorry, it's Dundee United next. Sorry, it's not Hibs.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sure there will be drop points if they continue to play the way that they are. It just needs more bodies. He needs more bodies and he needs time. I'm sorry, but we just have to be patient with that. There's going to be more games like that, unfortunately, especially off the back of European matches. You know, when we play Leverkusen, it's going to be another hard, high-intensity game of football where, you know, to be in the game, we're going to have to keep players on the pitch because we don't have the option to swap them out. And then on the back of that game, we'll be playing another, whoever it is we play, and it'll be, you know, there's, you know, the chance that we could get a similar outcome to what we had against Livingston. And until we can magic up some players that are fit and you know, can play in that system effectively, these are the risks that we take. And the injury situation just doesn't seem to be getting any better. I hope it's not true, but somebody who was right about McGregor told me that Johnson was injured in training again. So that could be yet one less option. We'll see if that's the case. I think he's on the front of the program cover for tonight. which don't normally means you're playing, but we'll see. So yeah, I've no magic answer to that, and I'm sorry. We just need to get bodies fit and playing more of them.
Yeah, just as a matter of detail, because I had just looked it up, is we go to Pataudry after Leverkusen, so not the easiest of, given the grand scheme of things. You know, it's not a cherry picked fixture. Coming off of that, especially have it, I think it's in Germany, but, so yeah, I think, I've been trying to kind of manage expectations for myself, and communicating that when I've been putting stuff out, because all the points that Alan raised, I agree with. It's just a matter of squad depth, and, you know, so many guys out, and, you know, with the lack of robustness in the squad to begin with, and, you know, some of these misshapen parts contributing to that, that those were all the risks that we talked about in August, where if some of these things happened, that we could be in a rough spot. So I think we're in the midst of that now. And I think even Ange is kind of, you know, without saying it, has said it, which is, you know, we've got some difficult things here that we've kind of got to try and keep this close in the league, while we're getting healthy and while the numbers kind of come back. And, you know, maybe that's Kyogo in a couple of weeks, hopefully. Sounds like it's a little longer for Forrest, which is a bit of a disappointment. You know, he had been supposedly 7 to 10 days out a couple of weeks ago, and now it looks like he's going to be post mid-October. So yeah, it's just real tough, and the issues in midfield are just not going away. Those are going to be there until at least January, pending some other transfers. So we need McGregor back. The problem with that is if he's having any kind of soft tissue injury issues, which they called it a knock, but that's one of the things that has changed at Celtic this season, is that the communication on the injury front has regressed. So they've been worse at providing any kind of information on what's going on with injured players of significance.
So I was told hamstring. That's why, yeah. I was really worried about McGregor.
Yeah. So that's a soft tissue injury, and, you know, a knock usually is 1 or 2 games, and now we're pushing well over a week now for him. So that's a kind of injury where if it's not properly healed, and then we're trying to flog him like we've been flogging him for 5 years, and just kind of throw him right back into that, then he could do something more long lasting, you know, more of, instead of a 2 or 3 week kind of hamstring, it could be a, you know, 8 to 12 week kind of hamstring. And yeah. That would be, you know, calamitous. So they need to let him heal, and hopefully they can handle this in managing him back to fitness and not act. So this is the hard part. You get decisions that end up being made out of, you know, maybe desperation's too hard of a, but being forced, you know, you get forced into playing people that maybe shouldn't be playing. And we talked about, hopefully they were going to be deploying a new system for managing injury risk. And now it's like, well, when you've got down to threadbare squad, you know, you get a Sophie's choice. Do you roll the dice on injury risk when you maybe think that the odds are higher than they should be? Or do you rest people knowing that your alternative is playing guys that you're not confident in as first team quality? You know, that's a less than optimal position to be put in.
Yeah, for sure. So let's finish up with Wraith Rovers then in the League Cup tonight. Do we start the likes of Boston Lawell, Mikey Johnson, these younger lads who, you know, have loads of legs, have not played loads of games? Liam Shaw, for example, Eric Hede, does he get a chance? What do we do here?
So I would not change the back three. So Hart, Carter Vickers, and probably if Starfelt's, I think he was ill at the weekend, if he's fit, I'd bring him back in. I'd keep those three and just keep building that relationship, building that continuity. I wouldn't change them at all. Juranovic, to be fair to him, seems like a guy that can run all day. So if he's fit, he plays. I actually thought Bongo did pretty well. I know, you know, there's a lot of baggage associated with him now. and you can't see anything without people's biases kicking in. But I would actually keep the back four, right? Maybe swap Starfelt in. What I don't think will happen, what I would actually try and do is I would have a go at recalibrating the central midfield. And this is going to sound counterintuitive, but I just think it's going to be better from a balance and overall game control. And just to James's point, the right Jenga pieces fitting together. I'd actually have Bitton and Sorrow as two sort of sixes. You've got a combination of passing range and aggression, and you've got a player that will sit, and so Sorrow's freer to be a bit more random as he is with some of his movements and his runs. And then I'd play either Turnbull or Rogic as a single, as a 10, closer to a Yeti. So as he's got that person to feed little balls through to him, I'd probably start with Turnbull. I think his form's good. And push him forward and play that sort of three as a sort of two sixes and a 10. Abada missed a few games. I'd keep him in on the right. I'd probably give Jota a rest, let Montgomery have another game. And there's no other option but a Jetty up front. So if it was me, that's what I'd do. But I don't know what condition the players are in, so half of these might be injured again.
James, do you want to have a go at your starting lineup?
Yeah, I think that's a great shout from Alan. I think that the only kind of practical tweak I would maybe suggest is to get I agree from a tactical perspective, the Soro Beton combination makes more sense, but I'd probably play McCarthy next to Beton just to get him more minutes, assuming again that he's up to it in his recovery from COVID. And outside of that, I mean, the only other thing I'll add is that Giamakis sounds like he's going to be on the bench. Hopefully bring him in with more than 5 minutes left, get him some time. If we can't rotate, so this goes back to the expectation management, kind of the practical reality of where Ange's tenure is at, which is because of how things are gone. You know, if we put in a poor performance, or, you know, heaven help us if we were to lose this game somehow, that could be a bit of a mess for him, just from dealing with the uproar and kind of the sentiment surrounding him, as Alan's talked about. I mean, kind of this friend, I've called it manic. I mean, we've kind of swung from manic, Ange is the savior and the reincarnate in mid-August, to, you know, a lot of people, or a significant number of people, I should say, kind of flipping on him after the Livingston game. So I worry about that continuation of manic. So this should be a game where we rotate heavily and get young people game time. And because if not in this game, then when? I mean, it's a League Cup game against a lower league team. And I think that the counter to that is somebody in Ange's position might say, hey, I want to win this might be one of the better chances to win a trophy. And, you know, it's kind of these dual priorities that go in. Given the need for rest and the minutes for some of these guys, as Alan went over, I mean, I think I would err towards raising the risk of, you know, maybe an uneven performance and just getting by beating a lower league team, as uncomfortable and unfun as that may be, versus going guns blazing, play a top starting 11 and trying to win 6-0, knowing that, you know, we've got another game on Sunday. And, you know, Dundee United are not pushovers. I think that they're pretty well managed at this point. And, you know, they've got their limitations with their budget and whatnot, but, you know, they're not going to be a pushover. They're not going to be a Dundee at home kind of game. I think they'll give us more fits. It should still be relatively comfortable, but again, that all depends on whether McGregor's fit, I think.
Yeah, I would be changing it up, but again, I wouldn't be a very popular manager, but I really want to see Liam Scales play. So I just want I'm right on. I'm starting a GoFundMe page for Liam Scales to start for Celtic if he doesn't start tonight against the Raith Rovers. I think
that's rankly hypocritical from you because he's left-footed. And with what we've been hearing the last couple of weeks,
He's the only one I trust. He's the only one I trust. Yeah, I make exceptions here and there. Exceptions to the rules, there always are. That is the Huddle Breakdown in the bank for another week. I'm not going to wish Celtic to have better results because the last week I did that and they lost to Livingston. So I'm just gonna watch the game. Hopefully it is a win. Hopefully it's not. Either way, we will talk about it and go over it. And we'll also have the Dundee United game as well next week. James Allen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, if you want to subscribe to the Huddle Breakdown, you can get it in the Breakdown Inc. folder. That is on Twitter, The Breakdown Inc. On YouTube, you can just hit the subscribe button below, get notified every time a video is live, and we will be back with weekly episodes every single week. Thanks for watching. Good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.